Hey there, Pages and Handles listeners. This is Zach Clemente, publisher of the new independent small press, Purgadhan Press. We have a Kickstarter campaign going for our first two books that ends on Wednesday, May 19th. We're publishing Threshold by Anka Gladnik, a beautiful dreamlike self-reflection on the creator's feelings around transitioning, and Faster by Jesse Lonergan, a RZA print book filled with high-octane motorway action, outlandish racers, and some truly inventive page composition. Check out Purgadhan Press on Kickstarter. That's Bulgilhan Press.
All right. Welcome to this episode of George Drives the Batmobile, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your Lopez hosts, Kyle, joined by my always favorite Lopez lover, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I'm really jonesing to talk some Lopez, talking about his Batmobile.
Yeah, I'm very excited. How everything's good weather out there that way today? Oh, boy. Well, I was hoping you said something good, because I hate to be more of a bummer, but we're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez, where after refusing Benny's pleas for a new car, and when Benny bribes Carmen to bring her to a bar, George and Angie are forced to drive Benny around. Angie quits after being invited to a makeout between Benny and her guests, and George brings her and her 10 friends to Circus Burger. We actually have a really good episode. I'm really excited. We're going to be talking to creator, publisher, the list of things is quite extensive, and I would never be able to do them justice. But John Gusman talking Cauldron of Burgers. I'm going to make sure I say I Googled it to make sure, because I was like, it's like one of those words that I feel like I get it. It's quest for materiality. It's fine. Damn it.
I say quest for materiality.
Materiality, and I know what it is, because like I was like, I get it, because it's the concept of the book, and I was like, I know what the word is. Why can't I fucking say it? I'm like listening to like Google Translate. I'm like, all right, I got it. And then American.
I woke up one day, and I had the word in my head, and I had to Google it to make sure that like I could use it as a title, and it wouldn't just be like, well, this guy's just making shit up, you know? So, quest for materiality. Yeah. I don't know if you have to do some oral warm-ups to get that going, but do what you gotta, I guess.
I'll write it out phonetically, which would have been helpful if I did that prior. But really excited. So I think kind of in the timeline of when this is up, I don't know if it will be out yet, available, but me and Tim, lucky enough to read it, it's fantastic. And I think, again, kind of like this subtle, like, even just like the title and kind of what you're approaching within the comic, I think is really interesting. How did like this idea come about? Because I think when you look at it, you get kind of like the visceral nature of it, but I think there's obviously kind of like more of the like kind of subtle undercurrent like that you're doing in the comic.
Yeah. So this is like, I've been doing this thing, I guess, the entire time I've been seriously pursuing being like a comic writer, artist, comic creator,
5 years.
Whatever I guess this is. I've been going back and I've been taking ideas that I thought of when I couldn't exactly draw them, and then basically applying the skills that I've acquired over the last probably, I guess at this point, 4 or 5 years. Well, how long ago was 2016? That's how many years? That's like I've been applying the skills that I've acquired over the last 5 years to ideas I couldn't do 5 years ago. So I thought of the initial interaction between the main character, Arga, the barbarian character, and the sow, that's the name of the character that I named the big fucking cow minotaur kind of thing. Basically, it was just sort of a thing of like this sort of primitive character going after what they think is sort of like a docile animal, and then it turns out to be this kind of big fucked up challenge, you know, this big fucked up enemy that they just have to literally pummel the living shit out of, you know. So that's where it started, and then actually the title for Quest for Materiality really. I just thought of it, and I had like two different stories that I thought it might be able to apply to, and this one just sort of seemed to make a lot more sense, you know.
And this is something, so kind of building around that. Did you have an idea? I know you're looking for like 3 issues, I think.
Yeah. I actually started issue 3 yesterday. It's been planned out, but I just I took like a 3-week break after drawing number 2 just to like really get my head on straight, because I was also drawing a cartoon zine for my patrons on Patreon while also doing that, and so I just needed a break. But I just started production of number 3, which is the final issue, Monday. Yeah, yesterday. Jesus, I don't know what time is. Jesus fuck.
At this point, yeah, time is relative. It means nothing. Is that something you had? Did you have it kind of as you went, at least kind of planned out kind of clearly, like beginning, end? Or was it something, just because, I mean, you're doing it yourself and kind of have that freedom, that is that something where you just take it where it goes? Or is it easier to kind of plan, like, you know, I want to do this in 3 issues, here's where I'm going to kind of lay it out? Is it easier to kind of give yourself guidelines, or just go where it goes?
Yeah, I'm really trying to be better about like having a plan before I go into stuff, because this was initially going to be like just a 60-page graphic novel, and I thought it might actually be better to split it up into 3 issues, like, and just keep it like sort of traditional comic book, I guess, format of like 20, 22 pages, whatever it is. And I thought it might be cool, being that it is sort of a quest that this character is constantly advancing on, having sort of like that Game of Death style, like sort of advancing to the next environment, the next enemy sort of thing. It felt like the best way to go about it. And then from there, I sort of planned the 3 issues. Now, I've done comics. Like, I did back last year. It was actually for college. But when I was in art school, I wanted to make things that I would actually put out in the world, instead of just to impress like a certain faculty, you know. I really took pride in my work, and I did a 40-page comic, but I really had no plan. I had an end and a beginning, and just no idea where I was going, and that turned out to be like the worst idea, because like when you're drawing and thinking, it's like just fucking just the worst. You burn out so fast. And then the rest of the book seems like you're running on all cylinders, and you don't have anything to run on, you know? So this time I came in with a bit more of a plan. Now, like, a lot of the fine details, like the meat and potatoes of each page, I'd sit there beforehand, maybe in Procreate on like and just like sketch it out, maybe work some like different panel like layouts and stuff. And I didn't have an exact plan for each page, but I knew what was going on, and I would kind of work it out right before I did the final page, you know.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, even looking at the inmate, which was something you're kind of on a weekly thing, and that featured there's like action in that, and I think even then, kind of working in the weekly format where it's like 3 panels or so, this, like, I think is like a step up in terms of visual storytelling. Like, it's really visually driven, because it's almost, I mean, majority of it's silent. Is that something you wanted to do specifically as you went into it? Was that easier to, like, I think the action is actually like really well planned, and there seems to be kind of like clear pacing and setting where people are, where the action is going, and like, you know, it's not just like, you know, 2 people punching each other. Like, there's a clear like fluid motion between that. Was that easy to do, like, kind of make that transition to kind of more like an action based like fighting comic?
Yeah, well, I actually, my brain sort of separated all 3 issues like this. Like, first issue was going to be very primitive action, violence, and honestly a lot cleaner of a style, like a lot cleaner of, and that's kind of saying something, as opposed to issue 2, which was going to be, because issue 2 is a lot more dialogue-based, art-based issue because it has a lot more to do with, you know, thought and thinking things through and stuff. And I don't want to give away too much about it, but it really has a lot more to do with the mind than it does or brains more than brawn. Now, this is an influence that I cite pretty frequently is Genndy Tartakovsky. I think his era of Cartoon Network is like one of the greatest eras of cartooning ever. And the fact that, you know, he wanted Samurai Jack, which is one of my all-time favorite shows, he wanted that to mainly be silent and be mostly action. And that was sort of a huge inspiration for me to be like, you know what? Okay, maybe I'm not doing it. It's going to be a lot more of a challenge to, you know, kind of get this over and have it be exciting as a comic as opposed to animation where there's motion, there's sound, you know, it's not just people talking, maybe not like Dragon Ball Z where, you know, or some kind of anime where they're explaining every single motion that they're doing while they're doing it. Not that I don't love anime as well, but I'm just saying, like, I think for comic's sake, it would be a lot more of a challenge to, you know, well, one, have successful, like, really kinetic drawings for the action, but also just have the action because it's really... it's a very primitive setting, you know, it's like a very just like one-on-one, you know, just duking it out and may the best person win, you know? Yeah. And I had a kind of a fear about it at first. Like I was really, I'm like, fuck, like, is this just going to be stupid that like I'm not having any dialogue, you know? But then I'm like, well, now I have to do it because I'm afraid of it. You know, like I have to just see how it goes. And I'm glad that you guys think it's successful and you guys actually enjoy it because, you know, you guys are obviously big fans of the medium and know a lot about the medium. So I really appreciate, like, those were the things that I was going for. And I'm glad that you guys were able to pick those out, you know?
Yeah, it feels, I mean, mentioning Genndy is like, feels very primal, like I'm looking at the Samurai Jack Blu-ray box set right now, which I covet and the doll on my kitchen touch, but we watch. But primal is like, I know that's something he was building to for like a long time, but like that thing is like, it's like highest tier art. Like it's so beautiful, and again, that's completely silent, and well, outside of kind of like, you know, sound effects
grunting,
and grunts and stuff. Yeah, but
it's
like
an incredible show.
I think it's so
incredible
beautiful
show.
What he's able to pull off, and like it's kind of like a example of obviously kind of like taking those risks. So like I always appreciate in comics when, again, people are willing to kind of push the story visually because it is a dual medium. Like there's visual and narrative, so like, you know, the intelligence of readers is, don't, if you don't play down to it, like I always appreciate it when people kind of push it visually and like allow things to breathe and read visually.
Yeah, and I, that's sort of my goal as an artist is to be able to capture a feeling, and it's like if you're reading this and I have to explain the feeling to you, then it's like it almost feels like maybe I'm not doing my job as an artist, you know, to communicate something in the way that I'm supposed to. Like one thing I'm a big fan of Cerebus and like, you know, Dave Sim, mm-hmm. and one thing I noticed about his work was that especially with the action, you know, there's narration bubbles for the action, you know, and part of me can appreciate that because, you know, obviously it's, you know, in my eyes, a masterpiece, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know if I could get away with that because I'm also not really as like eloquent of a writer as he is, you know, and obviously, you know, he's a very controversial figure as well. I'm speaking all controversy aside, just purely the book, you know?
Yeah. I think, again, too, there's kind of a clear, like, you can kind of see at least the inspiration of something I was going to ask you about as well, is kind of like navigating and kind of juggling the, I think, more, and for lack of a better term, like, cartoony aspect of, I think, the character design. Like, you're going for kind of like the over-exaggerated, kind of like grotesque nature of character design, and merging that with kind of, again, real pacing and action and gore and violence. Is that something, as you've developed your style, kind of finding like where you fit? And I think like Cerberus is like a good example of that. I mean, obviously it's like a little, you know, pig looking guy in this like very detailed realistic world, and often in very, you know, thought-provoking situations, but also kind of like he's always very good at kind of navigating the two worlds he's kind of living in. Same with like Bone, which is very similar in aesthetic.
I love Jeff Smith for sure. Like I'm a big Razzle guy. I really loved Razzle.
Oh fuck, Razzle is one of the greatest.
Yeah, but so that's a good question because I think from the beginning of me being, you know, like really my pursuits as an illustrator, I always just found like anatomy, like drawing anatomy, to just be so boring, you know, and like just like doing regular anatomy. And this is just my obviously there's a lot of people that are very capable of making it very exciting, but for me personally, when I'm drawing it, like I'm a very like what's the right word here? I'm very much like an empath in that, like, I feel things, you know, I feel things very intensely. And when I draw something that really is just maybe like just a regular punch or conveying a regular punch, I'm like, no, it doesn't. I want to feel like this person just got like their head spun around. So I'm like, I found that if you just extend the limb just like a little bit, you know, and extend, like mush up the face just a little bit more, and the neck is extended just a little bit, you know, you have maybe a little bit of this coming out or that coming out, a tooth coming out, just little tiny things like that, just little tiny details of it, just push it just a little further. That becomes exciting to me, you know, and if you add the motion lines and whatnot. So it definitely is, as I developed as an illustrator, I really found that a lot of these bendy, sort of drippy limbs, it just excited me, you know, and it was exciting to be able to be like draw something and be like, wow, I could feel that, you know, I could really feel that punch, you know?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, again, referencing kind of, I think the school of thought that people like, you know, Genndy and like looking back, and because like I think one of his big influences, like the, you know, the Tex Avery, the Fleischer, like where if you're the idea of animation, and if you play with that, like you can convey those emotions, like, and even his two Hotel Transylvania movies, like, you know, aside from them being Hotel Transylvania, like they're like beautiful to look at because of the way he's extending faces and pushing limbs, and you know that really pushes something visually again. Which, like, if you want to take the visual part of the medium and push it to do the storytelling, is often like a good way to do it, I think.
Yeah, for sure, I agree.
For this story, again, kind of in this brutal, primal narrative that at least the first issue is set in, I think it's interesting kind of focusing it on, like, a female, like, barbarian. Was that something early on you kind of noted as well, kind of, that you wanted to do versus, like, you know, obviously, like, I would think that, like, clear, like, parallel with someone like Conan or anything like that. Like, having it be a, like, female to be in this situation, was that something you wanted to do early on? Was that kind of the idea behind it?
It was just the idea that came to me, and you know, especially early on when I was like you know, starting to draw and like starting to kind of really put my stuff out there, I had a few female friends that were just like, why do you never draw women? You know, like, why do you never, you know, like, you just have a like set thing that you do. And I'm like, honestly, like, I don't even, like, when I used to draw characters, I didn't even think about gender. I just drew, like, funny facial structures. And I pictured the people being, like, blue and green and, you know, just kind of these really fucked up looking things. I didn't even really think about that. So I'm like, it would be sort of a great maybe not a challenge, but it would just be something different to be able to put myself in a different space to draw, you know, a woman character, because, you know, and my philosophy too was that it's just like, you know, that I don't want to draw somebody an experience that's not mine. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be, I'm a male, you know? So it's like, I don't really understand the experience so much, but I wanted to be able to, like, just portray a different character, and a very important character in the Cauldron of Burgers universe being, you know, a woman, you know? I think those are that's probably the best way to put it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So this issue, and obviously kind of a lot of your comic work is in the black and white medium. I think what's really interesting as well is your art and your, like, the... I'm blanking on the word. Like your showcases you've done, like your fine art, like, is really, like, the way you play with color in that is crazy as well. Like, I think you kind of make the best of both. Is there a focus on the black and white for comics? Obviously, kind of the do it yourself, like being able to print it, I would imagine is easier. Is it working in that, like, versus like the other part of your brain that is working in the color aspect in your kind of painting and fine art skills?
I definitely think that in some, like, I'm working towards working in color because I want to find the right way that like works for comics. As far as like painting goes, like the painting thing is very new for me. Once I started going to, you know, art school, once I went to college, and I was sort of surrounded by like all this fine art and like this fine art study, and I had to make art and, you know, I had to make stuff on canvas and whatnot. Like, I really found like this, there was a lot of like freedom that you have, just that you don't really exactly get in comics, where it's like comics, you have a lot of little tiny windows that you have to fill and carry out like a story, where my paintings was just more or less like, I just want to throw shit at a wall and see what happens, you know? And I think that the two sort of like one hand sort of washes the other, in that like my paintings inspire my comics and my comics definitely inspire my paintings. And also, by the time I'm done with a comic, I just want to throw shit at a wall. And by the time I'm done with paintings, I'm like, I want to be able to just get a little more organized for a second. But as far as like the color, I guess, schemes go or whatever, I've always been a huge fan of just black and white comics. You know, I feel like if you're able to really harness the boldness and the contrast between black and white, obviously citing like Sin City as a huge influence on that, and a lot of Jeff Smith's stuff too, I feel like if you're able to harness that, you can make something so dynamic that might just be sort of dull in sort of naturalistic color, you know? There's just, like, especially when you harness contrast and whatnot, like, really, really dark blacks and then, like, really, really, you know, I guess, like, bright whites, you know? I feel like there's something about that really adds to, especially what I do, sort of, like, this kinetic, rhythmic sort of drawing. When it comes to painting and stuff, like, I really felt like that was just a way to create a world and I honestly just get my chops with color theory, because I started with black and white because I didn't know shit about color. And then when I went to school, I started learning the color wheel. And a lot of my my paintings, pretty much all of them actually, are really just, you know, primary colors and then their complements and a little value shifts, you know? Like, so I really try and just take what I have and take what I know and just make the coolest thing possible out of it. I don't know if that answers the question. I went on a bit of a tangent there, but...
Again, yeah. So
actually, wait. This is working.
Being,
yeah, this is
like
working.
An old lady with a million fucking tabs open. I think that's what I was. I clicked over. So I'm always like, try to do as much, you know, research and have so many things. So I'm like, oh, just I gotta have this open in case I need to reference it. And then I think
yeah,
I have too many.
I was surprised you brought up the inmate, because that's just on my Instagram and I wasn't sure if you followed me or something. I'm like, oh, because I'm like team follow back, so like. I'm like, oh, did he follow me? And like, I just didn't know, or, you know, or something like that. I would have, you know, whatever. You can follow me on Instagram for sure. I was surprised, and I'm pretty happy you brought that up, because that was something that I wanted to bring up as well. But I know we're also just kind of sitting here talking about Quest for Materiality, so I'm sure
we can get
into that later.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously we could talk about kind of whatever, and that's again kind of with that, but also. You know, the whole kind of Cauldron of Burgers thing, being able to kind of put out and print your own stuff, but also I know that's kind of under you, like what you've been doing with the podcast and even the YouTube, which has been great to like see you ink and everything on there. We were talking like prior about like actually being able to like promote things and do that, which is extremely difficult in comics in general. I think even like, you know, like well-established people like have to be on Twitter like every day and be like, here's what I'm doing, here's this, and like, because it's such a like a self-promotion thing, because there's really like no structure around people in comics. Is that something that's been kind of difficult for you, or kind of I don't want to say difficult, but like with the kind of just embracing the brand of Cauldron of Burgers and kind of doing it yourself and doing all this, has that been nice or freeing and having that freedom, or just soul-crushingly pressure to do it all yourself?
I will say that especially in recent months, the pressure has been noticeable. I've actually been working on Wim Hof breathing as a breathing technique, and it really helps de-stress me when I feel like I got a lot of stuff going on. But regardless, No, you know, I honestly went into this feeling like either I wasn't good enough of an illustrator, or like just no one was ever going to really give a fuck about what I do. So it's like I might as well just take it all and try and make do the best I can with it, you know. Obviously, you know, I've been proved wrong, and I do have a very small following of people that really do support me, you know. But I think a lot of this DIY mentality really came from, you know, going to local shows, and specifically local hardcore shows on Long Island for the last, like, you know, 12 years or so. When it comes to punk and hardcore, there's this really big, like, DIY mentality. That, you know, it starts in hardcore, you learn a lot from hardcore, and then you kind of apply it to the outside world. And what I didn't realize until I really started doing comics was that there is a very, you know, a very parallel, whatever, relationship between punk and comics. You know, I feel like a lot of people that enjoy comics enjoy punk music, a lot of people that enjoy punk enjoy comics, you know, and whatever, what have you. But so, you know, I definitely feel like I've done things, and like I've put myself out there in ways, and it's never been like I've, like, at least as far as like really establishing something and really promoting stuff, like I've never like left with nothing, you know, where I'm like that was a complete waste of time, you know. And usually when things like that happen, where I'm like when I have a small success, it's just that much more motivating to keep going, you know, and keep building and building. I watched the video. There's this guy Seth Godin. He's like he's like some entrepreneur kind of guy. He does like TED Talks and stuff. He looks like the dancing Six Flags guy, but apparently he's like a fucking like billionaire. And he was talks about this how like artists should view their selling of their art as like a golf clap. Now, basically, a golf clap is like a very small clap, and then he goes, "Now do it a little louder." Everyone starts doing it a little louder, 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 until he had this big applause. Now he said, basically, you have you usually start out with a very small amount of people that support you, usually family and friends. You tend to those relationships, you nurture those relationships. Those people tell their people, those people tell their people, and eventually it kind of becomes this really cool thing. And I'm not, definitely not, an overnight sensation in any, you know, form of the word, or but I definitely feel like that, like, word of mouth has been really the most effective method for me, you know. Like, I feel like really just in-person connections and stuff has been the most effective for me, and that's why I'm like, I don't know, I don't really want to put this in the hands of somebody else, because I don't really feel like, I've also been proved wrong pretty recently with this too. I almost just felt like no one was going to get it, so the only person that could really explain it was me, therefore I have to print everything myself, I have to distribute everything myself, I have to pick up the phone. Now, not that I don't have those duties now, but I feel like there's a lot of people now that are really starting to understand me, and there are people that I didn't really think we're going to, you know. Speaking of the inmate, Pat Kinlan is a very accomplished comic book writer. He's put out stuff through Aftershock, he's put out stuff through Black Mask, he's about to be doing some really big shit, and I've read his new book. It's fucking incredible. And he's somebody that I met, actually, because he plays in bands. We met at a show in Ohio, we both played to like 20 people, and I was a fan of his work before that. I walked up to him
with Self-Defense.
Yeah. So it was Drug Church. And this is funny because I was a fan of Pat before I knew I was friends with him. Like, I was a fan. He had podcasts. I was a fan of We Can Never Go Home. That was a great book. It was between him, Matt Rosenberg, who I guess is doing a bunch of big shit for Marvel now. Have you guys ever read that book?
It's good.
I loved it. But I was a fan of him because of that book and because of his podcast and because of all of his bands. And it kind of felt like destiny that day that I, you know, we played a show in an empty club together. He was kind of just both on the way home from whatever tour we did. And I walked up to him. I just said, "Yo, dude, I'm a fan of what you do. You know, like I'm a kind of a brand new comic book artist. I've done absolutely nothing besides draw in my room. He gave me a bunch of great advice, and we kind of just hit it off, you know. But he's somebody that really, like, if he's got something to say, he's gonna say it, you know. And that kind of scared me, because I'm like, he's gonna look at my work and be like, "What the fuck are you doing?" You know. But no, it turns out that he really liked my work, and he really liked what I was doing, and we've had a pretty nice budding friendship to a point where now we're working together. And The Inmate is eventually going to be a printed book that I'm gonna print myself. But like that's I guess what I'm getting at here is that really, like, the whole DIY thing has been the only thing that's really worked for me. And, yeah, you know, it's just, like, just word of mouth, tending to people that, you know, or and maybe putting yourself out there a little bit, trying to branch out here and there, and then just tending to those people. Because a lot of his fans of his work kind of gravitated over to my page and kind of just stayed there, too, you know?
And it's such a interesting, like, you parallel and dichotomy, because I think it's something me and Tim have bonded over, is both of us big into music. Like, I grew up like hardcore shows every week and like in the scene. Yeah. And like that was my obsession, like in high school and college. And I went from like having, you know, bookshelves full of CDs to now like bookshelves full of like hardcovers and comics and stuff. And like going from like shows like to, I guess, like conventions now for like press and stuff, like it, like I approach it similarly, and like it's like going to hang out with people and like chill and hang out. Like, it is like very much the same feel for me, and it has like very much that sense of like, I think even with comic fans more, I don't know, obviously there's like some toxicity to it, but like I there's like fans, at least with comics, I feel like for the majority, especially kind of in the indie world, like when they love somebody, they love somebody, and like they're putting like all their like energy behind them. And that's very much how like it is with, I think, indie and like underground music, is like it becomes like, you know, you become invested in it. And I think like that's what's kind of great about especially indie comics, is like it really becomes like a, like once you have a fan base or like you are a fan of something, like you really like want to share that with everybody. Like I was the annoying fucking kid who would be like, you know, here's this band, you should listen to him. Here's this band, you should listen to him. Like, I don't fucking want to. My mom's like, I don't want to listen to this guy. I was like, I enjoy it.
Could I ask you guys a question? Like, what bands were you guys going to see when you were going to hardcore shows?
I was a big like grindcore guy. Like I loved like Number 12 Looks Like You. Okay. Heavy Lolo.
Okay.
Shane, they're like, are they Long Island ish?
Who?
Heavy Lolo.
I honestly don't. I know that like Glassjaw is definitely kind of considered, yeah, like, well, Glassjaw's from Long Island.
What about Crime and Stereo?
Oh yeah, Crime and Stereo. Oh, yeah. I
love them.
I'm actually a good friend of mine, Mike Musili, he played bass in that band for a while, and yeah, he's done write ups for my band and stuff.
Yeah.
They haven't really played Long Island in a while, but my current band definitely takes a little bit of influence from just like a lot of honestly like Silent Majority and like Kill Your Idols and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But like also the bands that kind of came after that. I don't know if are you guys fans of the Gorilla Biscuits at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. My current band, we actually just did a live stream on the web, the Vans website, and they do a show with Walter Schreifels, you know, guitar player, Gorilla Biscuits, and he kind of interviews everybody. And that guy's like my idol. So like to just be sitting there in the room with him is like definitely living out my hardcore dream, you know?
Is that creative wise? Because again, I think there's a fairly close crossover with that. I think, I mean, I think you see a lot of artist who can often, you know, at least for the most part, play a guitar or at least an acoustic. Like, I feel like there's a fairly good crossover. Do you think, like, high mind, like, is there the same part of the brain for you that when you're working on the panels and layouts and stuff that is crossing over with music and even, like, the kind of more, like, fine art medium where you're kind of expressing emotion in a more, I guess, abstract way?
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I think when I first started taking myself seriously as a creative person, I was playing music. Like, I started playing saxophone in, like, fourth grade, and I played up until my first semester of college. I taught myself drums when I was 12, and that kind of really, that took over. Like, I was a lifelong doodler, but once I started playing drums, that kind of took over my life for a long time. It wasn't until I was, like, 21, 22 that I started reading comics again, just because I had my first failure with, I guess, a band where we kind of got to the starting line of being, like, that definitely starting to do stuff, and then kind of came crashing and burning, just as typically most, you know, bands that get to the starting line go. So that was really, like, my start of really kind of dusting off my passion for drawing that I had when I was a kid. But yeah, I definitely feel like music in so many ways like inspires what I do. I mean, Quest for Materiality is like a very, very doom metal based comic, you know, like it's barbarians and wizards and minotaurs and mountains and like all that shit, you know. It's like a very, it's a very metal but very specifically doom metal kind of comic, you know. But I used to, when I first started drawing again, I used to throw on like Tool records, and I used to throw on whatever records I could find, Fu Manchu, like all sorts of metal and rock and stuff. And it really sort of plays in, honestly, even sort of plays into like the underlying dude humor that's sort of in all of the things that I do. It's like, as I was doing a little bit of a write up recently, and I was saying that, you know, the Cauldron of Burgers universe, and especially Quest for Materiality being year one to the Cauldron of Burgers universe, is almost like what the Silmarillion is to Lord of the Rings, but with like a ketchup stain on it, or like drinking a Slurpee or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I definitely think that like music and specifically like aggressive music, metal, punk, hardcore, rock, prog rock, all that kind of stuff really does not only inspire me, but really it's just a very big part of what I do with Cauldron of Burgers. I also just launched like a one-man prog rock band project where I play all the instruments on it, and I released the song. It's a 10-minute song called Quest for Materiality. It's all full of odd time signatures and crazy stuff. So if you want to check that out, it's under the name John the Movie. And yeah, it's so I think to answer your question, yes, they do have a pretty strong relationship.
So doing all that and then having time to do your own podcast as well. I mean, we talked before having recently the Gutter Boys on, and you've interviewed other people on there and kind of talking about comics, or also kind of which I think is interesting, working on your comics while talking. How is that aspect of it, especially kind of talking to other creators, for you, kind of, does that help as well to kind of bring in maybe not inspiration but also like different thought processes into working into your own comics, kind of how other people, because I mean, I think one of the things, like especially with the Gutter Boys, which again, very like bad boys of podcasting comics, like the two of them are like extremely like accomplished and amazing like artists, like they're both fucking great, which is,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
It's like even crazier is like there's, you know, these two, but like, does that help for you kind of being in the world, just continuing kind of being in the world of comics, like with the podcast and stuff like that? Does it help to refine what you're doing on your own?
Yeah, you know, I definitely, just even philosophy wise for my life, I always consider myself like a student, you know, like, I'm always trying to learn. And to be able to talk to other artists about what they, how they carry themselves and what they do, you know, I'm also somebody that'll try anything once. And it's like, to be able to talk to other people and maybe hear different techniques that they use, it's like, yeah, I'd like to apply that to my process. Like, I actually had a guest named Terry Orlando. He does something called Smile Comics, and he's like pretty low key about it. You know, he gets his stuff printed. He does a lot of zines. He also plays in a band called Age of Apocalypse, which I forgot to ask him, but I'm pretty sure that's a very obvious like comic reference. We were talking about it, because he's always saying like, dude, I always see like what you're doing. You're so prolific. Every week I could check out Cauldron of Burgers stuff. And then I was telling him like, dude, like I feel like, you know, you're so calm and you're just able to sit with an idea until it's ready to come out. And I almost like feel like I don't know how to do that, you know, like, and he's like, dude, it's really just when it's meant to come out, it's meant to come out. And, you know, maybe it, just because you're producing a high quantity doesn't mean that you're enjoying the quality of the experience. Maybe you're not producing the same amount of quality. And it's like, for me personally, like I am happy with the work that I produce, but you know, I think that there's times where I stress myself out in that I'm like, fuck, I feel like I just have to get things out. It's almost like this very, the reference I use is Rob Pollard from Guided by Voices, where he's just got to get these ideas out. It doesn't matter like if they're perfect or this and that, they just have to come out, or else he's just going to be ornery or pissed off or maybe even nauseous, you know. But it was nice to hear that other perspective and just admire that in somebody else and just be like, yeah, well, you know, it is possible to just like not feel like you're running out of time and just feel like the idea, when it comes out, it'll come out, you know. And it's things like reasons like that that I do the podcast. And, you know, I also just like having a transparent experience, you know. Like, I don't really care for, like, the mystery behind, like, what people try and do with social media. Or I'm a very social guy. I'm a very social creature, you know. And I just want people to know what's going on. Because it's like, okay, if I do happen to, like, fuck something up, or, like, I have to delay something, it's like, it's not going to be really, like, out of character for me to be like, all right, listen, I got to push this back a week, you know, for anybody that was expecting it, you know? Just, like, things like that. Like, I'm just a fan of being honest. Everything about Cauldron of Burgers is an honest experience, you know?
Yeah. And now that you're in, you're in the podcasting world, and you're in, like, a central place. You're in, like, one of the biggest true crime stories places ever. You could just meld it into Long Island serial killer coverage, and you could make tons of money.
Yogo Beach, they still don't know who did it.
Yeah, you could do it. It could be under wraps. That's what Cauldron of Burgers is actually about. And then that's where the real money is.
It's all clues to figure out Long Island's most notorious murderers, or murders rather.
And you're, again, I can't think of, like, kind of underplay, like, again, the putting out your own comics. And I think, yeah, when this episode, or it's up, because I published already, Jesus Christ, I don't even know our schedule. We recently were talking to Robin Chapman, and she's kind of, like, huge in the world of, like, mini comics, not only, like, publishing, but, like, kind of like a historian in that sense. And, like, we were talking about, like, the simplicity of them and, like, how kind of amazing they are, because they're, like, the gateway in. Like, anyone can make them, and that's not to, like, demean the idea, but, like, the kind of what we were talking about. Like, if you have an idea, and whether you think your art is good enough or your idea is good enough, like, make it, put it out there, and if it's, you know, something you believe in and is actually, like, you know, a coherent thought, like, people will find it. And if you're able to get that across, whether or not, like, you're Frank Miller versus, like, you know, Rob Liefeld or somebody, like, you know, you can get the point across. For you who are making it, what actually goes into, like, so you're putting this out, you just did the Cauldron of Burgers zine, like, how much actual work is it to do it yourself? Is it, like, a lot of work?
You know, I really feel like, if you look at it for what it is, it's really not that hard to do, you know. And depending on just the quality you want, like, because I know people that, like, kind of take the whole, like they make zines and sort of just take the whole, like, really play up the character aspect of it, where it's like, this just you're holding this, you know, piece of shit, you know, like a copy paper thing stapled, you know, with no thought put into it whatsoever. They like that sort of thing. I actually, my friend does a zine called Dog Shit Zine, and it's just like a hardcore zine, and it's literally, because everyone calls him Dog Shit Dave, so shout out to Dog Shit Dave. But yeah, he just went into, like, a copy room and just photocopied the pages. They're all, like, you know, faded and whatnot, and he just stapled them together and he gives them to people, you know. But it really, even if you want to do, like, a quality jump, or you want to keep progressing, it's really not that hard to do. Might cost a little money. It might mean that you got to spend your money a little more wisely in order to do it. Like, I don't buy things. Like, I really don't buy, like, clothes. I don't buy, I feed myself. That's probably, and I buy art supplies. That's as far as, like, my money, my leisurely money goes. You know, I don't really, like, go out for beers or anything. I don't really do any of that sort of thing. Like, my fun is in creating things, you know? So to be able to keep advancing and keep progressing through that, that's what I find fun. Therefore, that's what I do on my free time, is, like, I research paper. I research the best way to print things. It's like, I went to Staples for the longest time, and I didn't like how I had to just sort of wait, and if they messed pages up, I had to kind of, like, walk up there with my tail in between my legs and be like, hey, listen, you messed up a couple pages here. You know, I just wanted to figure out how to do it myself. And it's like, okay, you might have to research a printer. Therefore, you have to save up for a good quality printer. Or you could go to, you know, you could find different print shops. And, you know, you'd be surprised the amount of resources you have around you. Like, I did two comics, the 40-page one, Cosmic Debt, and then I did one called Spectral Fluid, both of which were zines that I originally printed. Just one was through a small hardcore zine called Pain Principle Press, and that was literally just like 11 by 17 pages kind of stapled together in the middle. It was, but it wasn't like modern comic sizes like I wanted. Spectral Fluid was originally like a zine, like a real just like 8.5 by 5 and 5.5 just like folded over. Over the pandemic, I realized that, like, I want to be able to do my own publication. I want to launch my own publication. So with that, I want to be able to have some legitimate releases. I started looking around with the best options for that. I reformatted everything to be, like, the modern size. What is that, 10.25 by, like, 6.625, something like that. That's, like, the modern I might have my decimals a little fucked up. But I researched it, and then it turns out that one of my friends that I met at a convention was actually, he's like the supervisor of a printing company, and I was able to get like 50 copies of both of those made through him, and they were really quality. But it was also like, I still had that nerve that like I still had the nerves of like, fuck, what if this guy fucks it like this up, and then I have to go back there, we have to print 50 more, I have to pay for these, and blah blah blah, and I just have like, it was just so much like mental gymnastics, you know. So I'm like, why don't I just figure out how to make find the quality paper, maybe find maybe get a new printer, because I have like a HP office jet, and that's what I print my zines out of, and just go from there, you know. And that's sort of where I'm at with Quest for Materiality. I actually have some pretty cool plans and some pretty cool experimenting to do. Also, sorry, I know this is good for podcasts, but I feel like I'm just like chewing everybody's ear off. Okay. But at the way beginning, I had no idea how books were made. You know, I wanted to do a zine, and I printed out Cauldron of Burgers Volume 1. That was the first zine that I ever did back in January of 2018. I did like so many, like I jumped through so many hoops to try and get everything in the right format. And then I realized that like I was making it so much more complicated than it had to be. And it really a lot of that figuring out wasn't just like, okay, I'm doing a double-sided page with my printer. It's like, okay, no, I'm doing a four-sided, or I'm putting four pages on one, I guess, full page. So that's like, mm-hmm. There's two pages per side, and then I have to figure out, that's how you get that middle like staple. You know, that was the biggest. Once I figured that out, everything else was super easy. You know, it's like, and once you really find the right resources that I guess really just explain it in a way that clicks with you, I think that it becomes so much less intimidating than anybody might think. You know, I hope I answered all the questions you asked.
No, yeah, and we talked about it on that episode as well. But like, that was the biggest thing for me. I've made one like mini comic zine, and it was like that type of thing where I was like, I'm just gonna do it to like get the thought out of my head and just to say I did something. And it was like me staying late at the office when everyone left so I could use their like industrial printer and copier. And it was like, okay, so this is a two-sided page, and they're going to be flipped. And it was like the, like, Pepe Silvia scene in, like, yeah. Always Sunny. I'm like, all right, so I got this number here. Yeah. And I was, like, printing numbers, and I was like, all right, this is going to be – and it took me fucking forever. But once I figured it out, I was like, okay, all right, we're at that point. Now I can just print it and do it. But it's satisfying.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like – one thing that I found is that if you present somebody with something you made, especially at a convention, like if you say like, listen, I put these books together myself, and if they they hold it and it's like quality, you know, that's like 50% of the sell right there. You know, like that people will just take it based off the fact that you really sat there and made it, you know. I think especially with like everything being digital and like nowadays, and we're working towards this very less tangible media type world that we're like this thing we're approaching. I feel like once you say like, listen, here, take this, you know, and that they're holding it in their hands, they're looking at it, it's like really, it really makes a huge difference. I don't know if I could ever be like a purely comiXology type you know, comic guy, you know, comic creator. You know, I think that part of what I do has character, especially in a physical presence? What's you know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, you want something tangible. You don't want just exist in the digital space.
Exactly. No NFTs here.
No. Yeah, as someone who's sitting in a tomb of bookshelves right now, I don't know what you're talking about. I want, just want NFTs up the wazoo. Now I confuse myself. I was looking at this thing. So you put all this work. That's what it's fucking old. I gotta stop having these like tabs open because I'm like, I gotta do my research. I confuse myself with all these tabs. You've now put all this work kind of into that, and again, to kind of, you know, make the comics you want to make and the quality you want to make, and with the kind of larger idea of Cauldron of Burgers, is that something down the road you could see yourself helping other people or putting out books for other people or being it kind of more in the publisher space as well?
Oh, I'd love to. I really would love to. I'm just at a point now where, like, I guess financially, I don't know if I'd be able to do it. And I wouldn't, if I was going to be like a publisher, I wouldn't want, like, I almost feel like a lot of what I'm hearing from even like the big time publishers is like, there's like a lot of responsibility on the creator now. And it's like really weird. And it's like, why would I go to a publisher? Why would I try and pitch to a publisher when it's like, they're just going to make me do all this work anyway. And it's not even, I'm not even going to reap the full benefit of it, you know? So it's like, if I were to be a publisher, I'd want the creator to have full benefit of somebody being like, listen, I'm going to make these for you. You just have to get me the actual idea, you know?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's like when you see publishers put things out on Kickstarter, you're like, well, I could have just done that myself. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like you have the name behind you, but at the end of the day, it's like that name is going to be taking a lot more of a percentage for, and I'd like, I'm speaking off of no experience. This is literally just what I'm hearing and just from my friends that do deal with these sort of things. I'm not speaking off of personal experience, I guess is what I'm trying to say, but really just from a out of the box, outside looking in perspective, like, yeah, just like, why would I, you know, why would I invest my time in trying to get the attention of a bigger entity when really those resources that they would give me are kind of just available to me now? Kind of the music is moving the same way in that really all you need is a couple thousand dollars and, you know, a good publicist in order to have a successful, like, you know, physical release. And it's like, those are things are available. You know, you could start a record label and have it be pretty decently successful in a short amount of time. Like, I've seen my friends do it. You know, I've seen the people that the labels that I'm on, I've seen them do it. You know, it's just a very, I think the creative world overall is starting to realize that. And that's why a lot of people are starting to go independent. Even my girlfriend, she's a tattoo artist. She just opened up a tattoo studio, in Huntington, New York. And all of her friends, you know, a lot of people are just talking about how they just went into private studios. They're just like working for themselves now. It's like, why would I give a shop 40-50% of my work when, you know, I'm doing all the work? I don't want to do that. You know, nobody wants to do that, especially if they're the one doing all the work. You know, it's like, oh, just because you gave me a roof over my head or you gave me a home or whatever doesn't mean that I owe you all this money when really I'm just existing inside your space when I could also just exist inside my own space and reap the full benefit, you know?
Yeah, and I think, well, hopefully, I mean, I don't know, hopefully if there's like one good thing to come out of maybe the pandemic is that is like, no, like kind of that, the idea that people, I mean, you can do it yourself. There's really a flaw in a huge number of systems that we operate in, especially with, you know, people doing things and, you know, even working 40 hours a week, I think people are realizing that's fucking...
Yeah,
dumb as shit. Like,
fuck that shit.
Like, you can do the normal amount of work. I mean, the amount of actual work I do within the 40-hour week at my real job, which I don't know if this ever, maybe I'll cut this, but it's nowhere near 40 hours. But I get more than I need to get done. And this will be the average mention of a podcast where I mention that I occasionally work some hours at Barnes & Noble, and we had this guy. We caught this. We haven't caught him yet, but we figured out that there's someone stealing CDs, and like they've been doing it for years, I guess. I found their stash recently, and they've stolen like $4,000 worth of CDs.
Have they not heard of like pirating music?
Well, that's what I was like. We were like, like, who's doing this? And I was like, it's got to be like a fucking old person, right? It was like,
yeah.
Who's stealing Frozen CD? Who's stealing four Frozen? Either that or they're like reselling them. But like,
it's Lars Ulrich. He's he refuses to use Napster. He's just going to grab CDs now.
He's got to recoup that money. Yeah,
exactly. So,
I'm not sure. Before Tim does his final question, I just want anyone that, again, goes and checks out Culture and Burgers, or again, especially this comic, like, what do you hope they take away for something that is so kind of, I feel like, you know, personal and you, like, that is like this work? Like, what do you hope they take away from that experience?
I hope that they see that. They see my books. And they and maybe they look at whatever they're doing and they just think, well, this is possible. It might not come in the way that or immediately come in the way that they might have initially desired, but it really would just jumpstart a process of getting to where you want to go, really just for yourself, you know, not having to listen to the peanut gallery or not prove to anybody that, you know, what you do or what you want to do isn't worth your time. In fact, time is the greatest currency, you know, and that's why I spend my time doing everything that I possibly can to work towards and just do the things that I want to do, you know. So I would hope that people see that and they think, well, anything that I do is tangible if I really just put my mind to it. And as you said, you know, people are starting to learn that, you know, the 9-to-5 life is kind of bullshit, you know, and it would just mean that, you know, I don't know. I think that, hold on, I got a call that totally fucked up my entire flow. Okay, but let me start that over, or at least start from the checkpoint. Basically, I just want people to realize that, you know, living a life that is safe is not always the best option, you know, and living a life that is secure as opposed to maybe something else that you want to do that really not many people are going to be in your corner to do, that is most likely the more rewarding and more satisfying option, the most fulfilling option, you know? So basically, all I'm trying to say is follow your dreams, don't listen to anybody, and burgerheads unite, if you do happen to become a burgerhead.
Speaking of fulfilling options, I'll let Tim do his final question.
Oh, yeah.
All right, John. So, gun to your head. If you were forced to write one episode of Two and a Half Men, what would happen?
Oh, no. Oh, shit. Oh, there's a fucking gun to my head. Jesus Christ.
It's really stressful.
How long do I have to think before he shoots me?
All right. Yeah, I don't know if we've ever had anyone take the bullet.
Literally, all right. So Charlie Sheen walks in, and then is that Matthew Broderick? Is that who that is? Who the fuck? What's the other guy?
It is. Yeah, they're the same person. It's his name? John. John Cryer.
Cryer, yeah.
John Cryer. They both walk in the room, and they just beat the living shit out of each other for fucking 25 minutes. And then the other kid just walks in, sees what's going on, and then he just joins in, and it's just like a fucking cloud, and they just start beating the fucking shit out of, just like destroying the entire living room, the entire set, just violently, and that's it. Then the episode ends, and that's all I got.
Yeah, and that sassy nanny can come in and say,
and then, yeah, yeah, then Ashton Kutcher comes in, and he just pulls his pants down, and he takes a shit on the floor, runs out flailing. And then that's the show.
Was there a sassy nanny on that show, Tim?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know anything actually about the show. I don't know if it would be better if we actually researched it, but
I like that question, because Kyle does a lot of the talking. He does a lot of the questioning. And
yeah.
Then he tag teams Tim for the finisher. And that's it. It's great. I love that. It's a great format.
That's actually the show is it's an hour long misdirection of me asking questions about comics just so we can get Tim's question in.
Damn, I feel like I just like figured out the secrets of the universe. I feel like I just like shined the light on the back of the Declaration of Independence, and
we're gonna have to cut the treasure. So we don't right now. Yeah, our whole rope-a-dope is messed up now. But if anyone wants to find out about you, your comics, the insane amount of stuff you do, which I'm envious of all your time and energy, as I sit with, make sure my kids aren't dying.
That's honestly way more important than anything that I do, for sure.
Debatable.
Hey, you said it, not me.
They don't listen to this yet. So,
I mean. Oh, okay. Right, am I supposed to be doing plugs right now? Is that what I'm doing?
Yeah, that's a long roundabout way of,
all right. Whatever you got. So my Instagram, at Cauldron of Burgers, all one word. I have a website, cauldronofburgers.com. If you do want to follow along weekly with Quest for Materiality, I do offer an option on my Patreon for $3. You can get a digital subscription. Anything on my Patreon, any tier that you subscribe to, you also get a quarterly zine full of one-off comic strips, cartoons, gag strips, all that. Just things that I really don't feel need a 20-page story, but are just as important to me. You can go to patreon.com/cauldronofburgers. I have a monthly newsletter, which is tinyletter.com/cauldron_of_burgers. And then I have a podcast, which is the Cauldron of Burgers podcast. Now, if this wasn't subliminal enough in me saying Cauldron of Burgers a bunch of times, I don't know what is. You're getting very sleepy, and go check out any of the things that I just said. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. You could check out my new prog rock project called John the Movie, which I have a song called Quest for Materiality, which is sort of inspired by the comics. I won't say it's fully inspired or fully having to do with that. That's just about all I can think of at the moment. Okay. If you want to buy my physical copies of my comics and maybe the one-off zine the first quarterly zine I just dropped in March. If you don't want to subscribe to the Patreon, you just want to buy the zine, you could buy it on my Big Cartel, which is cauldronofburgers.bigcartel.com. And that's all I have to say.
And I think the you saw Spectral Fluid on there, right? And Cosmic Dead?
Yeah. Cosmic Dead is sold out. Spectral Fluid, I have like 10 copies left. And then my quarterly zine, I print those to order. So I guess they'll never be sold out until I just stop selling them.
Man, we gotta have people on who are not as good at social media as us. Because then everyone's always like, here's all these things. And I'm like, Tim, where do we have things? But we do. Yeah. Tim, where are you at?
I read over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madera.
And yeah, we do have a Twitter, which we will occasionally update when I remember, is @pages_panels. We're on the iTunes and the Spotify and stuff. I think you can rate us and it helps us. I'm not really sure what it does, but because we spend all this time, the most important thing is going out and supporting Cauldrons of Burgers and that. And again, trying to think when this will, either way, if you're listening to this, there'll be news of how you can get the comic. And like I said, it's really great. And the idea is if you go buy it and support John, then selfishly we can get more. And that's all I care about is how Kyle can get more comics. That's another whole secret of the show, is it literally just exists to support things so I can get more comics on my shelf.
I'm actually my sole purpose as of this weekend is to become an influencer just so I can get free shit, because we did that stream on Vans, and I guess you have to wear Vans, some type of Vans clothing, so they sent us all free shoes, and I'm like, damn, really? I haven't bought a pair of shoes in fucking years, so this is awesome. I don't have to buy it anymore, you know.
Oh shit.
Yeah,
man, you were talking awesome. You were talking about how, like, you know, spending your money for kind of on the things you find important and interest and stuff. And, like, that is, like, I just bought two pairs of pants, which are like the first pants I've bought in I don't know how long, and they were like on clearance. Both were on clearance for a dollar at Walmart because I'm like I don't want to pay for clothes, but then I paid like $80 to ship an Italian version of the manga Gone from Amazon Italy for like $60 because I was like, I gotta have this because it's not in print in English anymore and it's a silent comic and I can get like this really nice hardcover, and I didn't even think twice about that, but I'm like, oh, $5 for a shirt, and I mean
looking cool is expensive, and I literally don't care about looking cool at all. I care about living cool, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just like, yeah, I want to live a cool life. I don't give a shit how I look. I actually have food stains on like all of my clothes. Like it's just fucked up. Like, my clothes are a magnet for stains. So I just accepted it at this point. Gonna be a slob, but I'm gonna produce a lot of cool content. That's my purpose, you know.
Exactly. If I could just wear the comics I own, I would be much more happy. But I will not wear a shirt with a comic on it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Unless it's cool. But my kids are like, oh, you get Batman. It's like that weird. We used to ask about the Big Bang Theory prior to Two and a Half Men, and that has like permeated the sphere of influence where like parents want to buy you like Batman shirts because they see it. I'm like, no, I read Batman. Yeah. I don't need Batman on my shirt. But.
Yeah. I definitely get that. I understand that. Yeah.
But, go out and support John in any way you can. And, like I said, I fucking love the issue and I'm excited for more. And I promise Tim, I know it's been a year and a half, but next episode we will talk about George Lopez, buddy.
Can't wait.
Oh boy. Yeah. You might have to wait.